to the Seria Awesome podcast. I'm your host, Mina Rizuki, and as ever, I'm joined by Gab Marcotti and, of course, Nikki Bandini as we round up all the action from Serie A. Now, I was really sure of the fact that there was going to be a title race till the end. Lazio have since disappointed me deeply. I'm sure they've disappointed all of us rather deeply. And everyone was really looking forward to the match between Juventus and Atalanta this past weekend, because this was a potential banana skin for Juventus. We know how they struggle against teams such as Atalanta. And perhaps with them and then Sassuolo, a title race might open up again. But as we all know, it was a 2-2 draw, which means Juve are 8 points ahead of second place. So guys, does that mean that there's no more title race? And how bad are Juve, despite the fact that they're, you know, 8 points ahead of second place?
I think they're two separate issues. So is there a title race? I think it's going to be exceptionally tough, because I think it's also, Atalanta had won 11 games in a row in all comps. It's going to be really tough to keep that going. I think Juve showed a lot of issues in this game, and there's a lot of stuff that Sarri got wrong. We can't take anything away from Atalanta's performance, but I think, again, I look at this match, and Ronaldo did his job in terms of converting the two penalties and having one shot. Other than that, I thought he contributed relatively little. Dybala was very good. But that midfield, Mina, how do you... I know, we said next season they can afford to lose Pjanic because he hasn't been good, because Bentancur can play the position.
He can't.
Bentancur gets a chance. He can't do it. Certainly not with Matuidi and Rabiot next to him. How do you fix this, Mina? Do they have to get another guy in midfield? Do they have to bring in Mario Lemina? Or something
but
like
please,
that.
Please, don't even remind me.
No, but at least somebody who can pass the ball. It's extraordinary. It's 2020, you have an enormous wage bill, and you have two midfielders who can pass the ball, and one of them can't do it if he's out there on his own, and the other one's been poor for a long time and is leaving the club.
You know, I look at Inter, and I look at Lazio, and I look at so many other teams, and I'm so jealous of their midfields, because of their ability to control the ball, because of their ability to do something special. But what was so disappointing about this Juventus, and I'm sure you'll agree with me, Nikki, it's the fact that it was like a really amazing team, which was Atalanta, versus a collection of individuals. And this is so strange to me, because I thought, if anything, Juve was the side who, when they reached their Champions League final, you know, in 2015 and 2017, I couldn't pick out a star. So if it was ever going to be a Ballon d'Or candidate, I didn't know who to go for, because they were all so good, whether it was Pirlo in 2015 alongside, you know, Vidal doing everything he can, you know, the forward, the back line. I don't know. 2017, there were so many great players to choose from. But this side, it is so dependent on Dybala, hopefully, or Ronaldo doing something special. And the midfield is terrible. I have spoken about Pjanic so many times, and I'm not one who thinks that he provides the consistency that we require in that midfield. But, I mean, Bentancur came in because obviously this was going to be a fast game, although Sarri said at the time that this was a tactical decision. I mean, this was a case of, you know, he needed to rest Pjanic. I don't believe so. I think that he knew he was facing a side that's really fast and quick and didn't want him to be overwhelmed. But Rabiot proved he's getting better, but not that much better, let's be honest. Bentancur can't do the job. And Matuidi's just sort of there, like covering for Ronaldo. So in my opinion, get rid of all of them. But to be honest, I don't blame Sarri so much. I think it's a terrible, you know, it's a terrible team, let's be honest. But then another side of me, I just feel like this is the side that's being built economically. Why did you get rid of Cancelo? Why are we bringing in players like Danilo? You know, does anyone care about sporting merit anymore? Is this a team filled with players that can make the difference? Or is this a team that makes sense on a financial level and to, you know, make the brand bigger and better?
I think there's a lot in there, Mina.
Sorry.
I think there's a few things to pull out. First of all, just to sort of take a step back for a second, because, you know, yes, I agree with you that this Juventus midfield is uninspiring. If you were going player for player, Would you really look at Martin de Rumo Freuler and go, that's a categorically better midfield? Those are two individual players who are of a higher standard. No, the difference is that Atalanta play a brand of football that is more integrated, that involves everyone, that has a clearer idea of what it's trying to do. Thought was interesting in this game, specifically, you look at Robin Gosens, who's, I would say, their best wing back. He's certainly been the most productive in terms of goals and assists. He gets injured in the warm-up, and still the plan for Atalanta is, we're going to use our width. We're going to do. We're going to use Hatabar and Castagna, and we're going to basically bypass that middle of the pitch. So actually, Juventus had the numbers in the middle of the park, and that just isn't where the game was played for a lot of it. And I think that, for me, is the standout aspect of this game specifically. Just talking about this game for a second, rather than Juventus' greater problems, is that Atalanta for the first 45 minutes. Completely dictated how that game was going to be played. This was interim. This is at Allianz Stadium, where Juventus hadn't lost, I think, including this game now, it's 37 games. And leading up to Atalanta's goal, Juventus didn't touch the ball in Atalanta's half for more than 8 minutes.
It's 8 minutes and 11 seconds, Nikki.
Yes,
I'm sure you saw the video.
I did.
Set to Rossini's William Tell overture. That is absolutely breathtaking. Shame on the people who forced them to take it down, because that was unbelievable stuff. Sorry.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a sadness that copyright seems to stop us from having fun things sometimes, because that was an incredible clip, and someone who has the copyright should reinstate it, because I loved it. Yes, you think a better midfield than that might have helped Juventus to stamp some authority on the game, but I think that. I think I really want to say, yes, Juventus had the problems, but Atalanta were flipping brilliant. I think that my takeaway from this game, like above anything else, honestly, was that they are playing the best football in Italy right now. It was already my thought they'd won 11 games in a row, as Gab said, but this was the game against the team that is going to win the league, that you could certainly say is the best team over the course of the season, because that's how points tallies work. But Atalanta are playing the best football in Italy right now. And frankly, as far as I'm concerned, it's just a correct application of a bad handball rule that stopped them from winning this game.
Listen, before we get into the handball rule, I just want to also mention that, listen, I understand what you're saying in the sense that, you know, it doesn't really matter when you're looking man for man, that obviously Juventus do have a better team than what Atalanta have. But I think that when you went from having a collection of individuals and then asked somebody like Mauro Tussari to come in and do something with that, where Ronaldo doesn't accept to play in a different position, in that case you have to bring in Matuidi, and then you have to introduce something else and create a little bit more balance. Why bring in a coach like that who has a specific style of play and give him a team of individuals and ask them to play a different style of football than they've been used to for so long? What I love about Atalanta, and I've said this before, there's a part of me that was a little bit scared when you take away certain players like Gosens, like Palomino, do they still have the same efficiency and are they still brilliant? They are still brilliant, and they're learning how to be even better. When you watch their matches against Napoli, how they're learning to be mature defensively, their match against Cagliari when they knew how to manage their strength. It's just like in every game, they know exactly now, or are a little bit more mature when it comes to the defensive phase, how to sort of stop the opponent, but also know how to strike. And you can take off, and he did. He took off Paco Gomez, he took off Zapata, he took off Ilicic, and brings in Malinovsky, brings on Muriel, and they're always causing trouble. This is a team that believes in Gasperini and provides him the opportunity to bring out and to live the way that they want to play, you know, play the way they want to. Whereas with Juventus, it just seems to be two different philosophies in place. You've got Sarri, and then you've got a team that's really built for a proper pragmatist, a guy who just takes a bunch of individuals, and not even Allegri, who was a proper pragmatist, could make it work last year because he didn't have a midfield that could provide enough for players like Ronaldo and Dybala up top.
I think it's really interesting because I think there are some things about what Maurizio Sarri has done that are working, right? There are some things. I think Paolo Dybala is probably the number one thing you look at and think, this is a guy who the club was ready to discard, and he's having his best season in a while. And frankly, was the only player in that first half who felt like he was even there. And I think that is a genuine testament to Sarri. I think we've talked about it already on the show that Sarri's spoke to him and said, look, I want you playing close to the attack. I don't want you doing some of this legwork coming back, which seems counterintuitive when you've already got Ronaldo in the team and you think, can we afford to have that? But it has liberated Dybala. We're seeing a much better Dybala. The rest of the team, yeah, I agree with you. It doesn't have a sort of splendid logic to it. And I think it is definitely striking.
I just want to bring it back to the midfield pressing issue.
Sure.
And the defenders. I take all your points about the players and whatever, but when you're being pressed in midfield, and this happened before when, I mean, Mina correctly, I think, mentioned Allegri. When Pirlo got pressed, what happened? Well, you had Bonucci stepping out with a ball at the back.
Yeah.
And I assumed in this game, when you know that they're going to congest the middle or whatever, actually in this game, there's no Chiellini. So you actually have two guys back there who can pass the ball in De Ligt and Bonucci. And that simply didn't happen. And I can't wrap my head around why. And then I think it's coach's instructions. It's coach's instructions that they couldn't keep the ball and they couldn't build it from the back. Not even the odd long out ball where Cristiano may not be able to run as much, but, you know, he's a big dude. He can still hold the ball up and allow the team to come forward. That's entirely on Xavi, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's actually a really great point about those two. And I was having a conversation with someone just the other day, because Pogba's obviously had some nicer games for Manchester United. And I was saying, look, at Juventus, what was always striking about Pogba to me, among the many things when he was making his breakthrough, was his range of passing. And when you had that midfield, where you had Pirlo could play that ball over the top, where you had Pogba could play the ball over the top, and if you got on top of both of those, then you could have Bonucci could step up and play that ball over the top. It gave you so many different angles to attack from. And you're right, Gab, like actually in this game, they had two very talented players who could have been stepping up and supporting the field there, and it didn't happen.
So what does that mean? So Gab, so you're basically blaming Sadi for these losses that they are accruing, and you don't feel that he's actually managing to put his stamp on this. Is this the team not responding to him, or is this him not really being able to offer any authority?
Well, I'm assuming that's the first. If I was Juve internally, it's the first inquest. I would be like, did he tell Bonucci and De Ligt not to use their out balls, not to step into midfield to help out the way you would expect them to? Or did those two guys just decide not to? That's the first thing you establish. As you know, you touched upon this. This is a badly constructed team. You said it was put together for financial reasons. I think you're right. I think these free signings, you get these guys, you get Ramsey. Oh, look, he's free. Yeah, okay. But then
the guy
has a long injury record in addition to being Aaron Ramsey. Rabiot, same thing. The guy's a head case, right? He'll give you a good game. So they've made a lot of decisions like this. They gambled the house on Cristiano. Mm. And you're right. With Cristiano, you logically would expect a pragmatic manager rather than somebody like Sarri who brings different assets to the table. I mean, look, in the end, they're still there, right? They'll likely win the title. But I want to ask you this. I've asked you before, if you could go back in time, would you not do the Cristiano signing? And you've sat on the fence. Don't worry. I'm not going to ask you this now. I will ask you
on
the last podcast of the season. But
okay.
I will ask you this. If you've been limped to the finish line and they get knocked out by Lyon in the Champions League or in the quarterfinals, do you reassess whether you want Maurizio Sarri back next season?
I don't want anyone back except for Marotta. He's the only one I really miss, you know? Like, I want to be looking at players like Ashraf Hakimi and Sandro Tonali.
So you'd fire Sarri. We're talking about Sarri, the manager here.
I would have never fired Allegri. I think that was, for me, I still blame Nedved for that decision. I feel like it was a poor decision, and I do feel like only a coach like Zidane and perhaps another pragmatist can come in and fix this mess. But Sarri, not because he's a bad coach. I think he's a very good coach. I think he's in a bad situation. And I don't think this is, you know, I mean, they're even losing the winning mentality. They conceded 4 goals against Milan in a blackout that we haven't seen in many years. Yes, I would absolutely get rid of Sarri, but not because he's not very good, but because I just don't think that it's the right marriage right now with Paratici at the helm, who's trying to buy all these players that have a brand name. More than it is what they can actually offer. Because if you think Danilo is a good deal, then I have no idea what to respond to you. That is literally the worst thing I've seen.
Okay, so I think we've done a good bit of Juve now, and I think we definitely talk about this handball rule. I want to say like one more sort of quick thing on Atalanta before we get into the rule stuff, which is just Mina sort of touched on it, the quality off the bench. I mean, Muriel, I think, has already hit double digits with goals off the bench season, which is extraordinary. Malinovsky, someone tweeted this at me and I shared the feeling. I really appreciated his commitment in that last part of the game to just hitting the ball physically as hard as he could. Because right before he scored, he had one that shot past the post and flipping it, he can hit it when he wants to.
And that was with his weaker foot too.
Yeah.
They're amazing. And when you think of what they can even do next season, the fact that they can change and rotate so easily, I think they can win the Champions League. But let's talk about the handballs, because, I mean, honestly, they so deserve to win this match.
Okay, yeah, so the initial reaction, I think, from a lot of people, because if you go back into the darkest depths of Serie A history, we've seen Juve get dubious calls and stuff like that, and they get accused of this all the time, because there's a history there as well with Calciopoli, and there's different versions. So I don't want to get into that, but that is a perception among the many Juve haters out there. I'm going to say my opinion. I think we're all in agreement. This was not a case of a referee saying, ooh, I better let Juve get a penalty here. Whether you agree with the decision or not, this is the way handballs have been called in Serie A all season long. This is what happened to Juve many times. We joked about De Ligt. I think he's given away 4 penalties this season on handball, something like that, which is an absurd amount. We're all agreement on that. We don't see a Juve conspiracy here, right?
No.
Well, obviously, I'm going to say no.
You know the word. You didn't even imagine you was there.
No,
so
I mean,
let's.
How long is it? You know what? 2 weeks since we were talking about Caicedo's extremely generous penalty for Lazio. It's not a conspiracy, okay?
Like, let's knock that.
There's no
on
conspiracy
the head.
There.
But we have this way of interpreting the rule, and by the way, it's not just in Italy, because it's in Spain as well. In Spain,
yes.
they have more of a tradition of giving handball penalties. But I'll throw out the stat, which I heard today. 50 penalties in Serie A this season for handball, 47 in La Liga, 18 in the Bundesliga, and 15 in the Premier League. Now, obviously, there's a few games left to play in all those leagues, more games in Serie A, but you basically get the trend. In Serie A and in La Liga, they've had a very rigid interpretation of the silhouette in your arm away from your body. Elsewhere, they don't. They still leave a lot of discretion. How do we feel about that?
It's absolutely appalling.
Yeah. I totally dislike it. I think it devalues games, unfortunately, because when you have a brilliant game of football, and then the result is so heavily defined by what to me felt like just casual moments. I mean, just absolutely casual, nothing incidents. You know, the second one was Gonzalo Higuain sort of flinging his foot at a ball that was going out of the area. This is not stuff of, you know, a defender sticking their arm out to stop something from happening. I find that just really frustrating as someone who enjoys watching football and enjoys seeing it brought to a climactic ending. I felt like we were denied that in this game, and that was sad.
Is there a fix?
And what the one thing I was going to say is what I always felt like I understand about this rule. It's not that I agree with the rule, because I don't. I would rather see it interpreted differently. What I understand about it is, for the referee, for the official, this interpretation simplifies everything. Okay, if the ball is going to strike a hand inside the area, and that hand is not in a completely sort of natural silhouette with the body, if it's outside the body or if it's, extending the silhouette, it's a penalty. Whereas before, you have this area of deliberate and not deliberate. And in the end, we've, you know, plenty of seasons to go back through of having this debate about, did the defender mean to put his hand out? Was it deliberate? And that is your choice. Your choice is between this, which is clear cut and simple, and the ambiguity of deliberate, which will cause its own arguments. For me, I would rather have those arguments than just have this, which feels wrong, basically.
I don't know about the arguments, because I feel like Juventus always lose those arguments, regardless of how many times it will happen to them as well. I absolutely agree with that. I think that it's, you know, it makes life so much easier for the referee when the rules are rigid and then all he does is apply them. But I feel like a lot of the point of rules is, you know, it's to keep your football being football and something that's enjoyed. It's not about millimeters. It's not about where exactly the ball. Sometimes, you know, like, I also think this can be used badly. And this was actually brought up in ESPN FC, in the sense that players may look to just start not actually finding somebody they can pass the ball to, but just hitting it on the opponent's hand and knowing that they'll get a penalty. I feel like
wonder a little bit if Dybala was trying that. A little part of me wondered if that was part of his thought on the first one.
I mean, I would do it. I mean, I don't think he did, but I would do it. You know, this is, I mean, the Italians are so famous for it. They even have a whole word for it, for vizia. I mean, you know, this is just going to be like a way of managing this. But I'm not going to go into the how, like, players will start using it. But I do think it totally takes away from the entertainment of the game.
So this thing with hitting the ball off a player's hand,
yeah,
is actually extremely, extremely difficult to do.
Yeah.
We all remember the ones when it happens, badge in the World Cup. I think that's, I don't think that actually happens unless the defender's really being stupid about where he has his arms. It's an extreme, normally from that position, you are much better off trying to get in a cross or a shot rather than aiming for the player's hand. Most players simply aren't good enough to do it regularly anyway. But
you may
what you said about the debate, the problem is, I mean, this has obviously been augmented by VAR. Pierluigi Collina made the point the other day that all these penalties that now we see given for handball, in the pre-VAR era, the referee wouldn't give them because he couldn't see them and he couldn't assess them.
Yes.
The rule, he says, fundamentally hasn't really changed. It's just that things happen so quickly, you're checking so many things, the distance of the opponent, whatever, that referees missed a lot of these handballs. With VAR, obviously, you're not missing them. But he says that the rule hasn't fundamentally changed, at least in Serie A for the interpretation. It's just that now, with VAR, these things get called. And I think in the past, it wasn't just debates that we had over this. In the past, we had accusations of bad faith from referees and conspiracy, and we in the media and people at clubs continuously, you know who they are, would go on and on. Referees would get blacklisted, they get threatened. They don't got to put up with this garbage just because you, Mr. Club official, or you, Mr. Local Journalist Supports a Team, don't like a decision. You know, that's the reality of it. And I think they've shown that they can't handle it. And so until you can handle it, what I would do is maybe you revise a situation where you leave discretion to the referee for when it's not a cross or a shot or an assist. So the Higuain one, for example, it's pretty obvious that Higuain isn't shooting on goal or he's not providing an assist to somebody because whoever it was it Cuadrado or wherever the ball was going, it's not like that guy was about to shoot. It's equally obvious that Muriel had no idea where it was. I would leave discretion for that one. On the Gosens one, sorry, not the Gosens, the Martin Deroon, I kind of feel, you know what? He's already defending with his arms behind his back. If he doesn't turn his back when the ball comes in, his arm doesn't go out. I don't think it's that big an ask to expect players to pay attention to where their arm is.
Yeah, I think this
might be the price we have to pay to have something that's less satisfying, but is more equal. The reason we brought this in was because people complain continuously about, especially in Italy, about injustices and conspiracies, and again, not without merit, as sadly history shows. Now let's deal with it. People get penalized equally, and hopefully we'll grow up in a little bit in our attitude towards match officials. I'd rather have people getting angry at the rule at VAR than getting angry at match officials.
With accusations. Yeah,
exactly.
And different clubs and stupid talk. Well done, really well put, actually. Obviously, these two teams, there was a Champions League draw, and these two teams are two of Italy's representatives, the other being Napoli, which we'll come on to later. So, like you said, Juventus still have to finish off Lyon and might not be so easy. They're already losing. And meanwhile, we've got Atalanta facing PSG. Now, I'm going to put a little money on Atalanta winning this whole thing, because I honestly don't know. Like, they just seem to be a side that is growing and maturing at a remarkable pace. And I just feel like, you know, considering PSG hasn't played for a while, considering the form that Atalanta's in, considering everything on a psychological level after coronavirus and Bergamo being the epicenter, is there something to be hopeful for? Or are we like, oh, this is a bridge too far for Kylian, you know, when you're facing Kylian Mbappe and Neymar and, you know, Mauro Icardi?
I mean, I don't... Well, by the way, first of all, you want to put money on, I think it's 11-1 you can get on Atalanta right now, which is pretty remarkable. But...
Take on me.
Paris Saint-Germain will have played two cup finals, of course, before they play Atalanta. The one thing that would make you nervous is if you have a team that have individuals that can quite easily break the press and quite easily beat their opponent one-on-one, and Paris Saint-Germain obviously have that, not just Neymar and Mbappe, that's not a good match for Atalanta. That's not a good fit at all. So it's not a great draw, but then you look around and, you know, I was looking at the other teams they could have had, like, did they want to try to outrun Leipzig? I don't know. Did they want to go and deal with Atletico Madrid? I don't know. I mean, did they want to deal with, Manchester City?
Wait, you don't fancy them against Atletico Madrid or against Leipzig?
You could see a team like Atletico Madrid just basically, you know, playing the 8-1-1 and then Diego Costa runs somebody over at the other end and scores. Leipzig equally, you know, that is a team that can certainly match them, if not surpass them, for intensity. Now, look, obviously, Leipzig without Werner is a better proposition than Paris Saint-Germain. But what I guess what I'm saying is, I don't know that there was that much of a good draw at this stage. I think what you're happy if you're Atalanta, you're happy that you're on that side of the draw and not the Juve side of the draw.
So you're saying, basically, if Lyon don't finish Juve, then it's Madrid or City that will.
Actually, you know what? Atalanta against the winner of Lyon or Juve, I don't know if that could would have been possible. That would have been a much better draw for Atalanta.
Oh, whoa. Nikki, where's your money on?
Well, there was a headline in L'Eco di Bergamo, which is the Bergamo newspaper after this game, that said, we'll see you in Lisbon. So I'm hoping for the Juventus Atalanta final. We'll see if it happens.
Oh, that's so sweet. I hope so. Okay, so obviously the other representative is Napoli in the Champions League, and they faced a huge game when they faced Milan, and Gattuso got to see his old team. And it was also poignant, interesting game between two teams that are probably just about, you know, as interesting as each other. Would you say 2-2 was a fair result when you consider what happened, you know, how the game went, basically?
I would say... I think both teams played well. I would have had no issue with Napoli winning simply because I thought that was not a penalty at the end on Bonaventura. Bonaventura trying to shield the ball or whatever. I don't want to break it down to an individual decision, but I think it was Maksimovic, if I remember correctly. I think he gets the ball, and I thought Napoli played really well in this game. And I know that you're a much bigger Gattuso fan than I am, but I'll tell you what, I think in that game, we saw another side of Napoli. We didn't just see a defending counter type Napoli. So all credit to Gattuso there. I thought both teams played well, both teams are in good health, but I think Napoli just shaded it for me.
I thought there was, I remember there being an interview, except I just actually don't remember the player who gave the interview, in which he said that Gattuso was somebody who concentrated a lot more on the defensive side of the game and purely just lets you go forward and attack. But when you watch this match, I thought it was, you know, it was Napoli that had so much more going for them on that front than Milan. So I think it was Franchesi, actually, who's just been in remarkable form. When you look at that midfield now, that's one I would like for Juventus. But are you a Gattuso fan, Nikki?
I'm a little bit caught by that, Mina. I think we've crushed that Milan midfield a few times on this show in the last couple of seasons.
I know, but Benassi and Kessié are like finding their rhythm.
Well, I'm a big Benassi fan. I think he's a really good player. I think we can't go back to Juventus again. I think what struck me from this game, as with Gab, was more Napoli than Milan. It's a good result for Milan. And in the end, Napoli are basically playing free for the end of the season. They've got the Europa League spot sewn up because of the Coppa Italia. They're not going to get into the Champions League at this point. So this is...
Unless they win the Champions League.
Well, that's true. That's true. And we were saying before we came on, I definitely don't find it implausible that they could beat Barcelona. And in fact, you know, in many ways, that's the challenge for Gattuso now, really, is to keep his team in the sort of headspace where they get to the end of the Serie A season, ready to go into that Champions League game with the sense of, again, for me, freedom and fun that they're playing with at the moment they need to take through. I think that's the striking difference between where they were when he took over and where they are now. And look, clearly, I am a big fan of Ancelotti's work, and I think that a lot that went on there wasn't really just about him, but I can't deny that this team is playing with a different kind of freedom and a different kind of expression to where it was before. And I think that you see it in Lorenzo Insigne and you see it in Dries Mertens, and those are the people who are going to carry you. Those are the people who are going to win games for you. And Mertens was great again in this game. I think that's Gattuso's great success, and I thought they were the better team in this game, but it doesn't really matter to them. They drop the points.
All right. Okay. Before we move on to the next one, though, I just want to ask a yes or no question, which I know one of you is going to sit on the fence on. Do you extend Ibrahimovic's contract, knowing what we know, knowing the fact that he's come out and said things, knowing the fact that he makes a bundle?
No.
No. Neither does sit on the fence, Gab.
Easy.
Did Gab do that on purpose, though, to make sure we didn't? What about you, Gab?
No. Yeah. Cut him loose. I mean, that's it. Great player, but enough. If you're going to move on properly.
Now, is he old enough for Inter? That's the real question, because Antonio Conte did play Inter, obviously, won the match against Torino 3-1. They're now in second place after how much I've criticised them, at least. So this was just it was really funny, actually, because they've been terrible in their last few matches, let's be honest. And they conceded a last-minute goal against Hellas Verona. Again, they dropped points when they had the game in hand. And against Torino, it was obviously Handanovic with a mistake. They conceded a goal, and then they come back, and, you know, they showed what they can do, I guess. Is this an Inter side that you look at and you think they can really push on and be something special next season? Or do you have doubts about the fact that it's something about Inter, right? I mean, the characters can change, the people change, the directors change, but it's always a little bit crazy in that club.
Can I redirect slightly off that question? Because you mentioned him and you build up to it. Handanovic, that was a really bad mistake on the Torino goal. Didn't matter in the context of the game, but he just dropped it. Now that any keeper is going to make mistakes over the course of the season. He got quite badly beaten at his near post in the game before against Verona. He's 36 or 37 now. I think it's his birthday this week, actually.
What are you saying, Nicky?
Handanovic has been so good. He's been so good for Inter through a period when not much else around him was good. So it's not a question of what he has been. But everyone, keepers included, have their sort of their shelf life. And I think quite often with keepers, when the decline sets in, it can happen quite fast. Is this the beginning of the end of Handanovic, or is this just a couple of games and perhaps, you know, a season more broadly that just hasn't been his best?
Gab, I actually don't know.
I think they have other issues, frankly. I mean,
okay, but they have this one too, right?
I mean, for me, what's disappointing is these knee-jerk reactions week in, week out to what Conte does. You know, now the issue today, if you open up the papers, it's all about Eriksen again. You know, Eriksen was on the naughty step, then he was good again, then he was bad again. I think partly is Conte fueling this. But I think a lot of it is just the nature of the club. I mean, you saw the report about that which then the club said wasn't true, but now is unclear about how somebody who sent an internal email to apparently to the president Zhang, and it went out to everybody with an inter.it email address. I mean, how do these things happen at this club?
Wait, they sent an email, what? I didn't understand that.
You saw this, right, Nikki?
Yeah, so there was a report that there was a report in the papers about an internal report being made into what had gone wrong this season, not specifically on the pitch, but more broadly. And it was supposed to be sent to Stephen Zhang, and it somehow...
And so what was this?
This is the interesting part of this. Inter have denied that this happened, and, you know, I certainly haven't seen this email, so I can't tell you what's in it. And did this email really exist? Because, again, Inter have denied it. But the report is that this sort of account of what's gone wrong with Inter got to more people's inboxes than it should have done.
Well, I wanted to know what was actually written in the report. I want to know what they think has gone wrong with Inter this season. Or has anything gone wrong? I mean, they are in second place. Are we being a little bit too harsh?
I think the big thing is going to be, what are they able to do this summer? So you're getting some money back for Icardi. I don't know how much money they're getting back for Perisic, if they're getting any money back for Perisic.
Yeah.
Nainggolan is going to come and park his rear end at Inter again with his salary next season. So already you're going uphill. And I go back to this thing. Now the obsession seems to be Tonali. I take your point that, you know, you would probably love to have Tonali at Juve. But is this really a priority for Inter? I think that's one of the questions. And I think the other big question is, why are all these guys always hurt midfield? I guess Valero's old, so he gets hurt. But then it's like Barella gets hurt. Sensi seems to be perpetually injured. And so that's why we have so much Gagliardini in there. Again, so I think there's a physical issue there as well. Hopefully they can cut Godin loose and bring in somebody else at the back, maybe to be a fourth defender, because I think Bastoni has shown that
just as he gets his goal, you want to cut him?
I'm going to cut him because he's old and he makes way too much money. He's on the bench. I mean, I think that's going to be tough, though.
Yeah, listen, I agree. I just feel like a lot of the time what we concentrate on is just, you know, what players they bring in. And obviously there was this, like, hilarious rumor. I'm going to laugh because I know obviously it's not true, about them thinking of bringing on Allegri because, you know, Conte might not want to work with a team like this. And I just thought to myself, imagine he walks out on a team because, again, it's a 10-pound team, and then Allegri takes them to a Champions League final. But
that would be cruel.
I just want to say, like, well done to Lautaro Martinez for scoring again. I feel like that is really just a monkey off his back, and hopefully we can get to see him at least entertaining us for the last remaining games. Let's do a quick roundup of some other things that we want to mention. I know, Nikki, that you have actually both of you, yeah, have spoken about this as well. Sassuolo being the team of your heart. You're steady, just so impressed, steady, both of you.
Steady. Easy there. Easy.
Listen, sorry. Am I being dramatic again?
Well, no, I think, look, a team of my heart, obviously I'm an impartial journalist, Mina.
Of course.
Look, I mean, I was, as everyone who listens to this show knows, I was on the Atalanta bandwagon very, very early, and that team has given me no reason not to be on it. It's a wonderful team to watch. But Sassuolo, in recent times, have almost been like mini Atalanta. Like, people who wanted to call Atalanta a hipster club, I think they've transcended that now. They're just a European club. But Sassuolo might be your Italian hipster club to follow if you're looking for that sort of thing. They are playing great football. Roberto De Zerbi has got them very much in a mindset of playing on the front foot, pressing high, committing against teams that you think they shouldn't do that against, like Lazio, of playing first minute to last minute against teams like Lazio. Francesco Caputo scored in the 91st minute to win this game at the weekend.
Wonderful pun on Twitter.
Yes,
Lazio's chances of non Caputo.
Of starting 20-year-old kids up front and giving them a go. It's just one of those sort of courageous, swashbuckling teams that has been a ton of fun to watch. And since the break, I'm afraid I haven't got the results written down in front of you, but since the break, their results have been some of the best in Serie A. They're on a real roll. So
That's one of the big differences I think we've seen in Serie A this year, is that you would always get these mid-table teams late in the season that they start thinking of their holiday, right? Our work here is done. But you look at Sassuolo, you look at Verona, you look at Parma, who play completely different football. I mean, I think Parma is pretty horrendous football that they play, but they keep going at it. Bologna as well, another team, right? They keep at it late in the season. Right. And yeah, and I know you like Parma, but I mean, I like the city. We have very different tastes in football. I think that's remarkable. I think we should give, I want to mention one other weird story because we made fun enough of Lazio, but you guys saw this other nonsense with Lazio's nutritionist, this poor guy. So there was a report after the defeat at the weekend that there was some wild row in the dressing room between Acerbi the club's nutritionist. Lazio then denied it. Now it seemed that there's something in it, perhaps involving a team doctor. This nutritionist who's got a background in cycling had ideas about nutrition, like no fruit except for apples and whatever else. I find it hilarious that a Acerbi, who I like, if the story is true, would get upset with the nutritionist. And now it's like this guy's fault and not the many other issues. I mean, I don't know. Maybe this nutritionist is really annoying. I don't know.
I think the worry is, I think it's obviously like Lazio have just fallen by the wayside and there's just now frustration. So it's like, let's pick on whoever's really annoying me and maybe...
Let's pick on the nutritionist.
But for Sassuolo, you're right. I mean, Nikki, they've only lost one game since the football has resumed. And that was against Atalanta, which is totally understandable. And I know that you guys love them, and it's true they give kids a chance. And obviously, Raspadori got his first goal as a debut starter in Serie A, so well done to him. They scored 18 goals since football's resumed, but they conceded 15, and you know how I feel about defenses like that. You know, if you're going to score more, then that's fine, a little bit like Atalanta does it. But I enjoy Atalanta so much more because they just seem to be a little bit more mature now defensively. So I do have some things that when it comes to Sassuolo that I'm not... Anyway... I'm just a little bit too harsh. Meanwhile,
give a shout out to Zaniolo and Roma. Your boy Fonseca winning. Fifth place looked in doubt for a while, but you know, I think they kind of have it now. Yeah, hopefully.
I mean, I think that you know, obviously, ever since I spoke about Parma and I thought their wonderful job that they managed against, you know, neutralizing Inter, I feel like they've just gone. Meanwhile, what's so great about Fonseca is that I feel like he's just changed it up, and it's working. That triangle that you've got now, you know, with Dzeko and Mkhitaryan and Pellegrini. Oh, Pellegrini, I love him at Juventus. Anyway, and just having that triangle and pushing from the front and pressing, and you just feel like all in all, they are a much better team right now. And he's solved it. I don't know if he's solved it for the long term or whatever it is, but at least he's finding ways to bring Roma back. And okay, they haven't been really huge opponents that they face, but Zaniolo's back and they need another guy. Dzeko is not going to be the only guy that scores goals. They need another killer up front, and it's not Kalinic. Anything else to add on that? No? Okay. Let's move on to Ajax then. There is so much I wanted to say on this, but I know that, you know, like we've already spent about 700 minutes on everything. But Nikki, let's start off with you. What is your knee-jerk reaction to take from this week?
Mine is totally unoriginal and I don't care because it's the thing that I took away from this weekend. I thought that Atalanta confirmed to me that, as I said earlier in the podcast, right now, at this moment, they are the best team in Serie A. That doesn't mean they have been all season, doesn't mean that they deserve to win the league, because that's not how leagues work. But if you were asking me to pick a team to go play a game of football for me right now and win it, it's Atalanta. I think they exceeded, frankly, my expectations for how you can play away to Juventus, who aren't perfect, but are still the team top of the table by a long way. I thought the way they commanded that game, the way they took the game to Juventus was spellbinding. And it's a shame that the game ended up being defined by a handball rule that we've already spent plenty of time talking about.
Oh, on the good side of this all, Ronaldo's one goal away from Immobile. Sorry. Put it down, 11-1. So let's get money on Atalanta winning the Champions League. What about you, Gav?
Mine's equally unoriginal. Atalanta are the team of the season, come what may. But I'll give you a bonus one because I was entirely unoriginal and I subscribed to everything Nicky said. So Cristiano Ronaldo, I don't want to make fun of the guy, but I will. This head-to-head race in Serie A, especially we talked about all the penalties out there. I was thinking about this, right? Who's one goal behind me now, behind Immobile? Oh, one of these guys has, what, 13 penalties? The other one's got 11, something stupid like that? I mean, yeah, there's still goals, but maybe we should have a table. And I have no idea who'd be first. Might not be either one of these two guys without penalty kicks. Because when we have so many penalties in Serie A this season, we're heading towards a record, not just because of the handballs, like in Spain, incidentally. Maybe we shouldn't count these. Maybe if we have a separate award for whoever scores the most goals for open play. And then maybe Cristiano wins that. Maybe he'll still win it. I don't know. But this whole thing with the penalties, whether it's him or Immobile, I don't know. Just leaves me cold.
Maybe we should have one for best assistant, and then it's a lot more fun to watch Luis Alberto and Papu Gomez take each other on. What do you guys think?
We do have rankings for assists. We just don't make as big a deal out of them.
Maybe that's where it needs to be. But my knee-jerk reaction is just, firstly, everyone knows Capello is the only man in football that I worship. He will always be my favorite person on the planet when it comes to football. And I'm just going to leave you with the quotes that he said about Ralph Rangnick, which I laughed for about 45 minutes. He did interesting but unimportant things in Germany and arrives in a championship he doesn't know. What does that tell you about what they do next? I don't know. And should, I don't know. But I just thought it was a great quote. Anyway, thank you to you, the listener, for listening to us on Serie A Awesome Podcast. We'll be back to tell you if potentially Juventus capitulate over the next week and then we have something exciting again, or whether it just becomes rather easy for them to collect their ninth in a row. Thank you to Gab, and thank you to Nikki, and thank you to you for tuning in to the Serie A Awesome Podcast.